You're listening to Bands and Botanicals, a unique podcast where trainer and trainee discuss fitness, herbalism, and healthy habits for life. We're your hosts. I'm Paula Kirsch, owner of Botanically Curious and artisan herbalist.
And my name is Danielle Kreese, certified personal trainer and owner of DC Fit. Now, before we get started, if you could do us a brief favor and go to Apple Podcasts and just leave us a review, we'd love to hear from you. And with that being said, let's start the show. Welcome, welcome, welcome. How are you doing today, Paula?
Good. We just got done with our workout.
Yep. A little bit of cardio and core today. Mm-hmm. We've found a new spot to record, so hopefully less puppy distractions this time around because that was a wild recording last time. Mm-hmm. I actually am going to put a little snippet that I meant to put up last week of one point where the dog like hit over the food bowl. I don't know if you remember. Right. You just started laughing so much, and I think I started cursing. And so this one is going to go a lot smoother. If you hear anything in the background, friends, it will just be Chanticleer the rooster instead of Cypress the puppy.
That is just that kind of, you know, property. Homesteading Oregon life.
Yeah.
There's an animal somewhere. So today we are going to be talking about myths on either sides of our fields, and, you know, maybe dispelling some of those or just having a general discussion back and forth. So this is going to be a little bit more of like Danielle and I having discussions. We're wrapping up season one, so we've got one more episode after this. And then, yeah, we're just going to take a little break, live our lives, do some things.
Yeah, I've got to take a couple trips.
Right, yeah, get out of here for a little bit for sure.
Yeah.
So today I pulled, coincidentally enough, you know, this is crazy how this always happens, but we were walking up here to record, and I noticed that Danielle's property is starting to finally grow chicory, and I had mentioned it to her because I'm a big fan of the coffee, using it as a coffee substitute, along with a few other things, and that is the card that we pulled today. So, you know, you can probably identify this blue flower, much like some others call it, like a blue daisy or maybe a blue dandelion or something like that. But chicory grows along the side of roadways, in fields, and for that reason, it has the oracle property of sustain, because its ability to sustain animals and people in the environment around it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's really good, especially because there's so much, you know, in Southern Oregon, we're going into fire season again. There's still this, like,
in fire season.
Right, lingering of COVID and all these things.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the time it's hard to not only sustain yourself and your family, but having that need or that want to sustain the community in some way and help. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, chicory is just a really good reminder that you might not always have the exact tools needed, but just having a little bit of an ability, you know, can contribute and go a long way. And it's a favorite of mine. I think it looks really pretty for what would be considered a weed or a wildflower.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and it really was surprising. I mean, literally moments ago, she was showing me the chicory that was on my property. And I had never identified it, you know, out in nature or anything. So, just thanks, cards, for always reading. You read the room well, cards. You read the room well. But yeah, Paula had mentioned that today we're going to talk about some myths in regards to our respective fields. And there was just kind of a little like disclaimer I kind of wanted to start out with, which is almost a myth in itself. And it's this idea that, you know, once science has put something out, it's the end all be all. I mean, I think we can see it in a daily basis how science is always evolving. But I feel like when it comes to like nutrition or things about food or things about, you know, medicine, we tend to get locked in to the information we know when we first heard about it or something.
Right, right.
So I just wanted to say that, you know, the science is constantly changing and that there are studies or books or opinions that do contradict themselves because people, you know, have different variables. They do it for different durations of time. They have a slightly different focus.
Or the biggest thing is that they have somebody else funding the research.
Right.
You know,
so
that's
motivated by something specific.
I think that's the funniest thing when you go into the health industry. So many people, when they start looking into herbal medicine, well, you know, it's a myth that this herb does this because I don't see any kind of scientific research behind it, you know, and that's something I'm going to get into here. But one of the biggest thing is, well, anytime you see a research study, look to see what company's funding the results of that study.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. And like these conclusions too, even if they're like of the most like acclaimed or, you know, peer reviewed or whatever it is, they're tentative and they're based on the evidence at hand that we have right now. And like you just mentioned, they're based on people's perspective or kind of, you know, without realizing, I think people do, or science can have a tendency to kind of see results in the way that would fit their narrative.
Especially in America with the medical industry and pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah. And you think about like selling supplements. I mean, I was literally just studying about this yesterday for my nutrition certification and how hard it is to regulate supplements and how doing the research and taking the time to make sure that it's quality, that the quantity is correct, that what you are saying it does is correct, is really only up to the person processing the supplements. So it's almost like this honor system that you have to depend on. So, you know, I think it's just when it comes to science, when it comes to this hard data, like do your research, but take everything just knowing that things can evolve. Like nothing is completely 100% because we only know as much as we know thus far.
Right, absolutely. Especially for women's health.
Yeah, yes. Oh my God. Well, I mean, so much of it was just not even looked at for so long that I feel like now is when we're going to start getting more information, I think, in specific regards to women.
Yeah.
And their health. Yeah, just like the things that we talked about last time.
Absolutely.
With the cycles. It's almost like every time I have an opportunity to tell a girlfriend about that, that like this, our cycle is more than just like that one week that we have on and then it's just the rest of the time.
Right.
Like I'm taking initiative to kind of at least even the base or the most simple explanation of that just because just people didn't know. We didn't
absolutely
know.
I mean, when you want to sit there and be more effective and efficient, you need to realize that our society doesn't run on a female hormone cycle, and because of that, you really have to be in tune with your body to make the most of the energy that you have.
Yeah, so I know that Paula is going to talk about some herbal myths, and I'm going to talk a little bit about fitness myths, yes, but also, you know, I'm kind of reflective of what I'm studying right now and what I'm focusing on right now, so I'm also going to talk about some myths, general stuff in regards to protein and carbs and fat, and also, you know, this idea of can you build muscle while you're losing fat at the same time? And there, it seems like an obvious kind of counterintuitive thing, but you know, there are ways that you can work with it and there are things that we could dispel with it. So we're just gonna get into a little bit of that.
Right?
Yeah, so I guess I'll just jump right in then.
Totally.
Okay, so I wanted to start with protein because I feel like protein, I mean, protein, carbs, and fats, we throw them around so much, but I feel like protein is this thing that it's just almost seems arbitrary. Like, oh, I need to get in my protein. But what does that mean? Like, what does that even mean? How much protein are you getting in? What type of protein are you getting in? So some myths that could come with protein is some people may say that it can harm the kidneys and the bones. The kidneys and liver produce and process nitrogen-containing waste. So they produce urea, which is excreted in the urine. So it's true that if you're eating a lot of protein, it will increase that urea, so it does increase kind of this waste product. But it's not a problem for most people who are healthy individuals who don't have any kidney or liver issues. So it's, you know, it's about not taking this one idea or this one fear and like pertaining it to everything and everybody. I guess like If you don't have those issues, there's really nothing that you should be worrying about. I mean, people have been eating and ingesting protein in some form, and I'll say plant protein or animal protein, for all of our existence as Homo sapiens and beyond Homo sapiens. So, you know, just like kind of check in with yourself. Be like, is this even something that I should even be worrying about in the first place, or am I just kind of making up?
Well, and the biggest thing really is to look at the quality of the food, like you talked about last time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was just talking to my daughter about this, that she's eating bell peppers and carrots and some of those other things. But it's been proven that the nutrients that we have in the store-bought food that we buy is like a quarter, if that, of the nutrients that used to be in food or
right.
potentially in the food that you can grow yourself.
Right.
So, you know, if you're already on a, maybe a plant-based diet, even organic from the store, isn't necessarily the same. So if you're one of those
mm-hmm.
that is maybe on that, what do they call it, dirty keto diet,
mm-hmm.
where you're so scared of eating a piece of fruit
yeah.
or something else, you know, you're hardly getting the proper vitamins and minerals you need. Because,
oh.
you know, it's all processed a lot of the time, that cheese and that bacon.
100%. That was literally, like, the next thing about protein was that not all proteins are created equal. So
right.
it's not like, you know, I used to know people was like, oh, I just got done working out. I'm going to, like, mow down this, like, McDonald's burger and, like, that's my protein or, like, something
yeah.
like that, you know. And it's just not all protein is created equal. Processed meats have been shown to be carcinogenic.
Absolutely.
And maybe linked to cancer. And then you have natural proteins like fish and like chicken, which have no cardiovascular risks. And when you are restricting protein, I mean, it can show up to be problematic in different capacities of your life, in ways that you get older. So, you know, like if you are going to take in your protein, exactly what Paula said, know where it's coming from, know the quality of your protein, and then know that you can also build muscle with plant protein. I mean, we had a guest on here,
absolutely,
a
yeah.
vegan bodybuilder. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really, really important to realize that, you know, to look at different sources like that, like hemp seed and some of those other things, and not going toward a protein shake, like you mentioned before, because there's so much filler and so much
mm-hmm.
in that we don't realize, and it's so unregulated
mm-hmm.
that it's easier for you to throw some hemp seed, you know, or some almond into a blender with some other stuff and get some protein like that you can actually control
right
into your diet.
Right. I mean, the difference is between being or ingesting animal protein versus plant protein is that animal-based proteins contain higher concentrations of essential amino acids. So in order to get the same amount, you just need to eat a larger volume of plant-based protein and also just be mindful, you know, making it a whole protein or a complete protein. You know, they always talk about rice and beans, like what rice is missing, beans kind of make up for it, and they
mm-hmm.
kind of work together to give you a complete like kind of nutrient spectrum, I guess you could say,
right.
like making sure you have all the essential amino acids that you need, making
mm-hmm.
sure you have those proteins. And then later we'll get into, you know, some the impact of eliminating those things and what happens when you don't get all of your micronutrients, the minerals, you know, you take something away, there's something you're not getting.
Yeah.
So just knowing that, you know, don't be discouraged, vegan bodybuilders, because they exist, they're out there, you just have to be mindful and
yeah.
kind of make it work for you and their energy needs, just like everything else.
Yeah, I think even though we're focusing on myths in this particular episode, I hope that throughout the, you know, 30-some, almost 40 episodes we've put out, we've dispelled some myths in the health and fitness industry in general, and maybe some herbalism myths, or just opened a door to ask more questions about things, because we've mentioned herbs a lot, and there's always that disclaimer of, you know, everybody's different, every herb is going to work for everyone, you know, so always doing your own research.
Yeah.
And looking at a few different resources, because, yeah, like you said, taking that one resource and then just living by that one article is not going to suit anyone.
Yeah.
So, some of the things that I'd like to talk about, I guess, is just, you know, herbalism in general, some of the things that I've run across, especially kind of coming from more of a corporate business background and living in that, and then totally flipping it on its head and transitioning more into focusing on my health and getting into herbalism a lot more and things, is that, you know, a lot of people assume that herbalism is kind of an easy career path. You know, I see on Instagram and social media, anybody can be anything nowadays, and you can call
mm-hmm.
yourself whatever you want, and everybody has to be okay with it for, you know, and that's not necessarily a political statement. But in that same regard, I know there's a lot of people that call themselves herbalists, but don't necessarily have like certificates or the training or anything behind that. So even as an herbalist, you know, you have to continue your training, continue your education, all of those things.
And
but
the reason you have to continue is because information is always changing.
Absolutely.
And evolving,
but, you know,
things. And
it's a ton of science and chemistry. So
oh,
when
yeah.
people are like, oh, I'm going to be an herbalist because, it's probably easy enough to do. I like plants, whatever. Well, especially if, you know, maybe they weren't good in the traditional school setting. You're going to need to know a ton of chemistry. You're going to need to know math for different equations on ratios of things. It's not necessarily just this hoity, like, earthy, you know, hippie thing where we're just throwing a little bit of this and a little bit of that and shaking it up in a bowl and then drinking it. It's totally, there's, you know, equations.
I'm in a full moon.
Right. And, you know, and I mean, that can be absolutely fun to do.
Yes.
But when you already have that foundational, like, information behind it, then you can go forward with some of those things. You know, I have tons of books and, like, notebooks that I write formulations in constantly, so that way when I do a tea blend, I can replicate that exactly. It's not, you know, like, for instance, if it's one that I posted recently, which was about anti-inflammatory with willow bark, and we talked about willow bark on the show, knowing how much willow bark to put in a tea with rose and with rosemary and some of those other things, so they all act the way that they should collectively within the body as best as they can. It's really like what somebody would do as a pharmacist when you're blending medication. It's very, very similar in that way. And you have to make sure that you're willing to move forward and get the education that you need and, you know, instill. Because the more chemistry, the more that you dive into the phytochemical aspect of herbs, the more that you really can identify and understand. You know, one of the biggest things that we talked about in the previous episodes is taste. You know, and how you can be a little bit of a chemist by tasting herbs in a certain way. You know, things like that, where it's just something I wanted to mention, that it's a very long process, especially even in the States, even though, you know, in Europe and other places you can get a higher accreditation. You still here, being certified, have to go through a ton of, you know, hundreds of hours of work, then potentially working with a mentor, going through all of that, before you should really be, you know, offering any kind of herbal advice to anyone.
Yeah, because it's exactly like you said. I mean, on the surface, it's just like, you know, people may perceive it as, oh, you just put, like, some tea together.
Right.
But you are, you know, there are women who go to you for specific reasons, specific issues. It is exactly what you said. It's like administering medicine to someone, and you wouldn't do that without any formal education behind it. I mean, it's still, you know, it's still something that you're putting into your body. You've talked about things that, let's say, if you're pregnant, you don't want to take it because it can lead to contractions. I mean, that's not something you want to mess around with or take lightly if you're trying to help someone.
Absolutely.
And I guess so. I guess it also takes, it goes back to kind of that honor system, it sounds like, too, you know, like really kind of having enough respect for the profession and for the people that you're trying to help to put in that work to make sure that you are doing it properly.
You know, it's so easy for people to get bulk herbs online.
Right.
Because it's not viewed as a form of medicine. You know, you can't get, you know, bags and bags of aspirin, I don't think so, maybe somewhere online.
Yeah, I mean, I guess
and
you can
other
buy
things
a bunch
and mix
of
them
things,
together.
But yeah.
Right. But people can often do that, especially if they're trying to, you know, supplement income or do other things like that, and it looks like a fun, easy thing to do.
Right.
Even just teas, you know, making teas and things. And I know that people now, you know, we just talked about 90s music and growing up and how that shaped a lot of things. And looking at how, you know, after The Craft, that movie came out in the 90s, and how that's shifted. And so now the empowerment word for women sometimes is witch. And so women often use that, and then they start getting into herbalism, potentially, and looking into that. And then they, you know, sell little things on Etsy. And so it's just one of those things where I'm not discouraging anyone from going down that path, but you really, really need to invest in the education behind it.
Yeah.
And make sure you get that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm going to kind of keep on that same kind of food trend. And I wanted to talk about carbs, because I feel like carbs honestly sound, or like they almost like make people like insta panic or something. Like, oh, I can't eat any carbs for the rest of my life. Or, you know, carbs are bad. Like, carbs are almost like a four-letter word. Like, it's just, I was just talking to some friends and online, or through text message rather, and we were talking kind of about weight loss. I guess one of them was on a little 30-day journey thing and didn't lose really what she wanted to, and it was like, oh, I just like to eat foods, and it's like preferably carbs, and just even that little bit, you know, you just, I could tell that just by the tone that I was kind of reading it as, or the context, was that I was like, oh, carbs are bad. Like, I, you know, this is why, because carbs are bad. So I just wanted to say that carbs are not just the potatoes and the pastas and the breads that we think of. Carbs are also fruits and vegetables, and dairy can contain carbs too. And when you're, this myth that eating carbs will make you gain weight is kind of what I wanted to dispel. All carbs, just like protein, all carbs are not created equal.
Mm-hmm.
We have our complex carbs, and these carbs are rich in vitamins and minerals and fiber, and our body likes this and needs this, and we need this.
Mm-hmm.
Opposed to simple carbs, which are more kind of direct energy sources of energy, and they're easier to digest, but we burn through them so quickly that that's what we've referred to kind of as the empty calories.
Right.
So with these processed carbs or carbs with higher sugar concentrations, this means you may be more likely to overeat them because you're burning through it so quickly that you don't get that signal from your body that tells you that you're full or that you're satisfied or that you've, you know, you've reached what you need to reach. So in that regard, and eating those simple carbs and kind of potentially overeating those simple carbs in that regard, then yes, carbs can gain weight, but it's just like, or can make you gain weight, but it's just like everything else. You shouldn't only be eating carbs, or,
right.
You know, it's finding your balance. It's
mm-hmm.
finding, you know, there's macronutrient coaches right now. I haven't personally ever, been regimented in that for myself, but we had Molly on at the beginning of our season, and she's helped so many people, and it kind of just shows you, I feel like counting macros, and when we had that conversation with her, it shows you that carbs, protein and fat are all things that you need in your diet, and it's just
Absolutely.
About how and like how much,
right?
And what?
Well, and the biggest thing with that, you know, when I work with people and they mention maybe there's like dehydration or some other things where they feel dry, if you've ever had that feeling of being dry, you know, it's that nutritional. That's why actually a lot of the herbalism training that we go through is cross-sectional, where we go into some of the chemistry of it and then we go into the nutrition of it, because it's really important to realize and to understand that if your body's not getting enough fat, it can't lubricate itself, even if you're drinking a ton of water, right? And so that's why, you know, avocado or some of those healthier fats that are encased in other things in a whole form, not just some processed version,
yes,
support the body, and then, you know, getting a little bit of that on top of your water, on top of everything else, is going to help with that, because, you know, that's a big thing when people are potentially on a certain health plan that we've looked over and they feel really dry or things are shifting in their body. It's looking at diet, it's looking at
mm-hmm.
all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'm actually going to, the next one I talk about with fat is going to go into why it's absolutely necessary
mm-hmm.
in our bodies, and why it shouldn't be this like really, really scary thing. Again, it all goes back into what the quality of the food that you're eating
mm-hmm.
and taking that into consideration. But just to wrap up this carb talk, you know, if the simple carbs burn quickly, complex carbs often include fiber,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that's your grains and fruits and vegetables. And this fiber is going to help slow down your digestion. So that's why the energy gets released over a longer period of time, why you kind of will get that feeling of
satiation.
You'll feel full. and then also, you know, when it comes to carbs, there always is that conversation about sugar.
Right.
And good sugar, quote unquote, versus bad sugar, quote unquote. But if you have a cookie and if you have a piece of fruit, both of those things, whether it's naturally occurring sugar or added sugar, I mean, it's still sugar.
Right.
So we have this like good versus bad, and that's a whole other conversation we could have about the narrative around certain foods and then how we
right.
put that narrative into our brain when we eat it, and then how it comes out through shame or through punishment or whatever it is. But the sugar is not what's necessarily kind of what's going to be this different defining thing for you, but the thing with fruit is that you're also getting all of these other amazing things that your body needs. You know, if you're just going to eat a cookie with added sugar and you're not getting any other nutritional value of it, I think that's really where the detriment, where a big detriment can come in, can come into play, because with fruit, You know, you're getting vitamins, minerals, fiber. I mean, your body is like busy breaking all these things down. So I guess your body can tell, you know, when it's just like we talked about, the simple carbs versus complex carbs. So when you're digesting this cookie and it's just kind of that added sugar and there's nothing else that the body needs to digest,
right.
It kind of just focuses on the sugar.
Right.
And it kind of like gets all that into the body. But when you have vitamins and minerals and fiber that you also need to break down, it's going to go a little bit slower. You're going to be able to absorb all of these things into your body, so you won't feel like, oh my God, I need to eat 12 of these apples, the way you can maybe go through 12 mm-hmm. cookies.
Mm-hmm.
Just like kind of we talked about with the empty calories and how quickly it burns through the body.
Right.
So, you know, just like all those diets that are like, you shouldn't eat fruit. Blow my mind.
Right.
Like,
absolutely.
How does that seem good?
Well, and when, as an herbalist,
so
right, as an herbalist, when you go to treat someone, or I guess we can't use the word treat in America, but when you go to help someone with a particular case, a lot of the time you're looking at their eyes, you're looking at their tongue, you know, you're asking them about their bowel movements, all of these aspects come into play. And in one diet in particular that I can think of, with the keto diet, you know, your urine starts to smell bad, your breath starts to smell bad. I call it like death breath a lot of the time.
Oh.
And those are usually signs that there's a stress on your kidneys and liver.
Mm.
And there's a stress on your function. Because for anybody who's experienced, sadly, someone who's gone through pancreatic cancer, liver cancer, you'll notice the same type of smells.
Mm.
And so it's in a very acute way. But, you know, that's why a lot of those things aren't necessarily good long term, because it is putting an additional stress.
Right.
And that's why it's so crazy to me. So you're going to put your body through all this stress to look a certain way for who knows how long, but, you know, you're terrified of a banana.
Yes. I mean, honestly, to me, that's not a way to live your life.
Right.
It's also, to me, not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like, I guess some people have crazy discipline and maybe they could do it. I don't know. I just feel like that's where that depriving, and then that comes, that plays into then emotional things mm-hmm. that you're then dealing with also. And also that's kind of when you snap and then just like eat all the things.
Right.
Or like, you know, go to the other complete end of the spectrum because you've just been depriving and depriving and depriving. I don't know. I know this goes back to exactly what I said in the beginning. People are going to have contradicting opinions. People are going to look to different research in order to support their opinions.
Right.
This is just personally how we feel.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
So just to reiterate that, because I know that people are going to love their keto sometimes
right.
and like vouch for it and say they feel amazing, but again, maybe it's how you're doing keto. You talked about the dirty keto diet, or like, I watched people literally just eat like such gross, like just huge, like a whole just salami, not even cutting it up nicely, just like ripping it off. And I'm just like, this can't be great for you.
No, you know, because
and
then
processed
you look at,
to
right.
Like,
you look at the nitrates and processed
yeah.
meats, and there's plenty of studies that show that, you know, that it causes cancer and other things like that. And I think the other day somebody was saying, I saw an article, alcohol causes cancer, and there was a bottle of wine, and it's like, obviously, duh, it's a poison.
Right.
Like, if you didn't realize that before, I don't know what to tell you. Like,
yeah,
just because you're drinking wine heavily all of the time does not mean that it's not putting stress on your liver just because you get a cute t-shirt that says wine o'clock. I'm sorry to tell you, you know, somebody took the fact that grapes have tannins and that tannins are good for you and ran with it to produce this big buzz in the wine industry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what ends up happening.
Yeah, I mean, it, anyone who has ever had a hangover could probably, like,
right.
I have legit been like, poisoned myself. Like, so yeah, 100%. I mean, people are gonna pick and choose and focus on what they want to focus on, but
mm-hmm.
again, these are just our opinions. Take it or leave it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things that I wanted to mention, and I think we mention this on the show often, but maybe, you know, it just needs to be said once again, is that just because it's an herb and it's plant-based, quote unquote, doesn't necessarily mean it's safe to consume, especially if it's sold. Like we were talking about, you know, sold with certain labels that say all natural.
Oh yeah,
any
the
things.
Kind of like trigger words that are gonna
right.
be like, ooh,
so,
superfood.
Right. So herbal based supplements a lot of the time, if you're working with some of those things, and you know, just taking into consideration that like we said, there's plenty of evidence, I'm sure, to back the claims of that particular product because they need that at the time. But after the initial kind of setup of that, there's not as much regulation. You know, a lot of these things are dictated by whoever ran the study, whoever's funding the study.
I also read that that a lot of studies, what they advertise it will help with, or the population that they focus in on, their target population, isn't even the population that they used in the study.
Or it's animals. They don't even test
They don't even get to the human people. Yeah, 100%. I mean, it goes back to that, keeps going back to that honor system that we were talking about. And maybe that's why it's nicer to trust an herbalist that you know is credible versus just going to your local GNC and getting a thing that just has, like, some superfoods in the ingredient list.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you see a lot of testing done, and that's why it's so interesting when they talk about research studies, like, oh, they just need more research studies on plants. Well, you know, if you look and you investigate worldwide, there's tons of studies done on a lot of these plants, and they have been for a really, really long time. Chicory root, you know, it's been like 5,000 years people have known how well that it works for the body in certain ways. And so, you know, just because it's tested on a rat or a mouse or whatever else doesn't mean that it's going to work the same way in a body,
right,
like a human, especially a female. You know, when we talk about how complex the hormone cycles are, we've had Nicole on the show and we talked about the gut and how all of those things that quote-unquote de-bloat you when you have those, like, SIBO issues or SIBO, you know, and how you're so desperate to not have that little bit of bloat. And those things are marketed towards you where they have healthy, all-natural extracts.
Right.
You know, all of those things you really have to be aware of. And when you're drinking herbal teas, when you're working with, just reiterating again, just because it's an herbal blend, like, say, you know, I'm working with Danielle and I mix her up something and it's a continued conversation, just like you should necessarily have with any other provider or with yourself, where it's like, okay, really being in tune of what is this doing for my body, what is it doing to my body, and then adjusting that and changing that, because not all herbs are going to work the same on everybody.
Right.
And, you know, it's not like, oh, like we talked about with willow bark, oh, I'm just going to keep drinking it and drinking it and drinking it. Well, it works differently, even though it's got the same chemical components of aspirin. It builds in the body a lot stronger than aspirin would. Aspirin goes through the body a lot quicker. And so eventually you're going to start overdosing yourself and some of those things where, you know, anybody who knows anything about aspirin, after a while, you're going to affect your organs, you know, your kidney, your liver, some of those things. So things to really keep in mind and how dangerous they can really be, you know?
And I guess important to, I'm glad you mentioned that it's like always a conversation you could keep having or you should keep having. Like, I'm not saying that Western medicine doesn't do that as well, but, you know, I always remember my dad being like, oh, I'm on this, like, cholesterol medicine and I'll be on it for the rest of my life. Like, and I wonder, I know that he always has check-ins and stuff like that, but I don't know if it's handled the same way where, you know, you could, you have, I feel like, a little bit more space and just, like, room to kind of, like, change things that you're providing for people, like the blends that you're providing,
it's
or
a
the
lot
options.
Softer,
yeah,
you know, for a lot of things. And then the thing is, for anybody, you know, it's like, raise your hand if you've ever been to the doctor and you're sitting there in the, you know, in that room for 15 minutes, a nurse comes in to take your blood pressure and whatever else it is, and you talk to the nurse and have a cute little conversation. And then you wait another 30 minutes, and then the doctor comes in for 5 minutes, talks as fast as they can. Are you basically asking, are you dying? Are you going to sue me? Awesome. We'll see you in a month or a year or whatever it is.
Yeah, where you don't even feel like you're listening.
Come back. Absolutely. And so, you know, they don't necessarily ask a lot of those questions because in the medical industry in America and specifically, they're not incentivized by actually curing their patients. Like in a lot of other countries, you know, they're incentivized by saving the hospital's money or whatever it is. You know,
which
in America, if you are, and I'm not, you know, it might sound like I'm really hounding on medication. My daughter's vaccinated. When I have to go to the doctor, I go to the doctor.
Right.
But
again, like time and place for things. I mean, we know that Western medicine has like helped us kind of stay alive in many ways.
Yeah. And so, you know, just one of those things, especially for women, I know that Instagram is basically, you know, 90% of female platform, and everybody's selling little things online, on Etsy or whatever else, but herbal teas can affect any medication that you're taking. There's lots of herbs that are blood thinners, so if you're already taking a blood thinner, or if you don't want thin, you know, it's like all of these things. So when you go to the doctor and they say, what kind of medication are you on, mention the herbs of the teas and say, hey, is this going to counteract any medication I might be on? Specifically because I've noticed a trend where even at the age of 12 or 13, girls are put on antidepressants earlier. They're put on medication.
Oh my God, I've put on so many.
I've been a mentor for quite some time now, and here in the Valley, you know, it's so much misinformation. Girls aren't taught about their bodies. They're not taught about nutrition, but they're highly, highly medicated. Mm-hmm. Really keeping those things in mind, because herbs are, you know, and can be just as dangerous, or interact with medications and be just as dangerous. So it's really, really interesting. And, you know, like lobelia, we had I think we went on a hike and we had herbal cocktails, and I put lobelia in them. Well, a couple drops of a lobelia tincture, yes, will relax you a little bit, you know, whatever it might be, but it's got very similar, you know, and this is where the phytochemistry and the chemistry of herbalism comes in, very similar chemical components to nicotine. So if you consume too much of it, you'll get that nausea, you'll get that dizziness, you'll throw up, you know, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, what did I do to myself?
Right.
So it's like you see this one thing about how lobelia is really good to relax you, and then you're like, well, if it's good, more is better.
Right.
Not necessarily the case.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I know you've opened the eyes to so many people, but just what you keep coming back to, I mean, you've even said, like, on a day-to-day basis, what you need can change, and checking in with yourself.
Absolutely.
And feeling, am I waking up feeling anxious, or am I waking up feeling a little calm? Like, am I waking up feeling, like, did I sweat a lot last night, or, you know, kind of taking all this? So, yeah, so much stuff, and I know how much work and time you've put into this. I mean, it's not even just putting the blends together. Like, it's literally growing a lot of the herbs yourself. It's cultivating those herbs yourself. So I mean, yeah, find someone who puts as much work into it as Paula does, because she's gonna put you down the right path, and you know that it's gonna be safe and quality. So I was just gonna talk about some fat myths real quick, because again, just like carbs, we have this idea that fat is like the worst thing that we could put in our body. But if you really look back at any type of statistics, when we were in this like really big low fat phase, like what would you say? That was like kind of the 80s, 90s, I would say. I mean, getting into the South Beach diet and the Atkins diet and all of that stuff.
Right.
And, you know, the models that were on the one runway was called like heroin chic. Like if you were as a waif, then that was good. And
It was like this interesting sugar-free, fat-free, all looped into one. And so people were getting things that were literally devoid of any nutrient whatsoever, pumped with chemical sugar stuff, and they were just downing it, like, you know.
Oh, yeah, and I bought into that when I was younger, and I had all my, like, things with eating and stuff. Like, heaven forbid I got a regular-ass yogurt and not, like, a low-fat, like, no whatever, or reduced fat,
sugar-free,
or whatever it is,
right.
Sugar-free, but exactly what you were just saying, like, America, and I'll just talk about America because that's where we live right now,
right?
But they didn't get any healthier during that time. Like, they didn't go through, like, this crazy, like, health, oh my God, my body's reacting to this so amazingingly, and I'm losing all the weight that I want to lose.
As much as Hollywood would like you to think that everybody looks like, you know, a few people
Kate
in
Moss
San Diego
or something. Yeah, exactly, yeah. I mean, like, what was lost in fat calories was gained in refined carbs and sugar. Exactly what you just said. Pumping it with processed stuff. Pumping it with sugar to kind of mask the flavor that was gone by taking the fat away. But it all comes back to, again, what we said. Think about what fats actually do for the body, and try to eliminate the narrative of it being something, like, quote-unquote, bad. So fats, you need fats. You need fats for so much. You need fats to help absorb vitamins, so vitamins A, D, E, and K. Fat helps as an energy source for us. So we talked about it last time, but those longer endurance intervals that we've talked about, that is going to tap into your fat reserves. Carbs kind of provide more of that initial energy reserve.
Right.
So it does give us energy. We do need it for that. It helps our muscles to move. It helps blood to clot. It helps us think more clearly. Mm-hmm. So again, the quality and to an extent the quantity, but I'd say so much of the quality, so much of, like, you know, there is a difference in this regard. There's a difference between having an avocado and having healthy fats versus having, you know, like onion rings that's fried. And don't, I love onion rings, don't get me wrong, but I'm definitely going to eat more avocado than I am going to eat onion rings.
Or cheese. People go to dairy as their fat source. You know,
my dad's battling a cheese addiction right now.
Right. And it's one of those things where, yeah, there's plenty of studies that say keto's great or some of those diets where you're focusing on the fat. But at the same time, if you physically look at women who eat a lot of dairy, you know, there's a lot of issues there.
Mm-hmm.
Because how it affects your body when you're talking about your hormone cycle and the different stages you're in makes a huge difference.
Yeah, and I'm glad you just brought up that keto, because I know that I'm saying that, like, fat is a really important thing for the body, but with the keto diet, you're almost nearly eliminating carbs.
Right.
And so 60 to 70% of your calories are coming from fat, and the majority of the rest of them are coming from protein.
Right.
And some research shows that this does have, you know, potential to help people who suffer from specific diseases, or, you know, if consumed properly and safe, I guess, and mindfully, they do have, you know, a weight loss component to them and stuff like that. But you have to make them quality fats. They can't be like the bullshit that we were just talking about. And you also have to take into consideration that you may be missing micronutrients and fiber by eliminating some of those carb elements as well. Because remember, carbs aren't just a piece of bread. Carbs are your vegetables and your fruits as well. So you need to make sure that you're incorporating that so that you're at least trying to find a greater balance within the body if you're going to be completely eliminating a macronutrient, which, again, I don't completely, like, agree with, but you do you.
Right.
And also just keep in mind that if you are a high endurance athlete, eliminating carbs may not actually be really beneficial for you or something that you want to do, because you will be missing that glucose, which is our primary energy source. And it can hinder your performance. I mean, again, no one's created equal. All of this information isn't created equal, you know, and I'm sure you could listen to your body and maybe find ways that it works for you. But something tells me that a lot of, you know, the average person who's not like a professional athlete or something isn't going to take all that time to be like, okay, let me make sure my micronutrients and my fiber are on point and that, like, I'm doing this almost all fat protein diet in the safest, best way possible. Like, no, they just read about it and then they do it,
right,
and they don't really know how they're doing it. So, you know, just take all of that into consideration, and all of these things are necessary for your body. Fat is necessary, carbs are necessary, protein is necessary. So,
right,
you know, just eliminate that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the really interesting things when we talk about fat-free and sugar-free, specifically in the 90s when that happened for women, I think we've mentioned this on the show before, you really have to consider the fact that we carry our offspring or potential offspring in our bodies for our entire lives, from the time we're born until the time we die.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're talking about, you know, generational disease, a lot of these trends are very, very relevant from the 90s and the 80s to now, because these women who are now in their 30s or, you know, mid-30s or whatever it might be, their mothers who did all of these detrimental diets that affected their hormones, maybe affected their eggs, whatever it was, you know, when you get into epigenetics, and that's really the key of, like, switching genetic markers on and off. So how you can have twins where one has cancer, one doesn't, some of these things, where it switches over a lot of those things within your eggs, because anytime you're doing anything, you're affecting your entire body.
Mm-hmm.
And so those things have been carried on, and we see, you know, the body shape is different, and PCOS now is so prevalent, and all of these things. And one of the, I have a really roundabout way of talking sometimes, so hopefully that made sense. But, you know, one of the really interesting things is aspartame. So aspartame was one of those that was really big in the 80s and 90s, and it's that artificial sugar component that was put into absolutely everything, because it was a chemical and they couldn't actually identify quote-unquote calories that it had. So if it was calorie-free, it was okay to use, it was safe, you know, when we're talking about numbers on the scale potentially. But how detrimental that was to our bodies, they don't even necessarily know how much it really was at this point. And, you know, there's been a lot of studies done, and, you know, you can take that with a grain of salt because we just said how studies, you know, here and there. But that when you're drinking sugar-free Coke or Diet Coke or all these things that have that aspartame or that fake sugar in there, now the food industry is really, really intelligent because they've renamed sugar, fake sugar, 20 or 30 times since the 90s. Who knows what the hell they call it now? But you have to be a very savvy consumer to realize that you're consuming it, or potentially the stuff in the restaurant that you're eating, and how it actually makes your body respond differently to natural sugars. And so, you know, we talked about dopamine, and we had a neurotype coach on here before, and how we know sugar is essentially a drug because of how our brains react when we intake sugar. But if you're constantly ingesting aspartame, when you go back to eating actual sugar, the really, really interesting thing is your brain doesn't respond the same way. It needs more. And so even if you think it's a temporary thing, I'll just go on this sugar-free diet for a little bit and it'll be fine, you've actually changed a lot of the chemistry within your brain and your body to the point where you're going to have such insane sugar cravings at that point that, you know, and that's the same thing generationally. How has this really affected women and why some people have intense sugar cravings? Because maybe, you know, all of those things could potentially be connected. So it's really interesting to dive into it and look a little bit more, you know. And when people talk about herbalism and all natural and they just kind of scoff, I was talking to a friend the other day, and she's like, no, I'm a fan of, you know, Western medicine. And I said, well, they're not in, you know, different corners of the ring, right? What we always talk about is how it's important, you know, to have a nutritionalist, to have a, you know, trainer, to have this, to have that, to have whatever it might be, a group of individuals that are knowledgeable in fields that you can talk to or work with as a whole health approach.
Right.
And so herbalism has its place in Western medicine. It has its place with other things. You can go to an herbalist and a doctor at the same time. These aren't opposing themes. And, you know, for those that say herbs just don't work for my body, well, we've talked on the show a lot about energetics and how, you know, we can talk about an herb for, say, inflammation for that day. But people generalize the labels of herbs a lot of the time when they have a multitude of ways that they can be incorporated into the body.
Right.
And so, you know, it's just like when you're talking about maybe a cough, because that's a big thing, especially now with COVID, people do not want to be coughing anywhere. There's, you know, you've got plantain, thyme, marshmallow, you know, the list goes on of the things that you could potentially use depending on what kind of cough it is, you know, all of these factors. So it's like to say that herbs don't work for you, it's really a generalized statement to really look into it a little bit more and look into the science of it.
Yeah, so kind of just to wrap up from my end, and this kind of will bring it full circle a bit more into the fitness aspect of things, but it's this notion that you cannot build muscle while also losing fat or being on some type of weight loss program simultaneously. And for many ideas, or for many years, the idea that weight loss would inevitably lead to muscle and fat loss, kind of like I could see where it kind of came from. The reasoning was, I think, a little bit too like logical, or almost like a little bit too simple, but I get it. Because you think that you need to have a positive energy balance in order to increase lean body mass. So when you have people who are trying to be like bodybuilders, you see, I mean, look at The Rock. The Rock eats so much.
It's
insane.
But his workouts, I mean...
His workout, yeah. And that kind of is almost a different myth of... Since I started this nutrition coach studying, the main thing that I think I've gotten from it is wanting to almost eliminate the word calorie and change it into energy. Like, this has this much energy in it.
Right.
Because, you know, when people are trying to build up that lean body mass, you have to provide the energy necessary for your body to perform and to recover. So I get that. And then also, in the inverse, you think about with weight loss, you have to be in a deficit. So right. You have to have a negative energy balance within the body. So it didn't seem like the two could kind of coexist together. You'd either lose one or gain the other type of situation. Mm-hmm. And new studies are showing that, you know, it is possible to lose body fat and gain muscle, but like everything else, you have to invest in it. You have to think about the right food intake that you're doing, mm-hmm. and you have to think about proper training. If this is a goal for you, you can have a goal of both. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to what we mentioned, whether it's protein, carbs, or fat, but in this regard, I'm gonna say protein, the quantity or the quality of the protein mm-hmm. and the quantity of it is gonna affect you. I mean, let's take protein because protein is what we think of as, you know, the muscle, a building block for muscles, right? Because it has all those amino acids in it. So in the US, the recommended daily allowance for protein, they say about 0.8 grams per kilogram per day. Mm-hmm. And what we think is that that is just the number. Mm-hmm. And that's supposed to fit everybody. But one, the type of training, just like what we talked about with nutrition timing last week,
right.
And you know how for the average person, it may not make a huge deal if you ingest really soon after your workout versus a little bit later. But if you have specific goals, you know, what you're ingesting when and how much is going to affect you. So if you're trying to build a shit ton of muscle, having 0.8 grams for one guy and then applying it to like another woman or a different type of guy or a different type of woman is never going to like work the same for everybody. Right. So that 0.8 is kind of just the minimum. Like it's what you need. The base. Think of it as your base. And they did do some studies that showed that eating almost about like double, like 1.6 grams of protein can help you lose weight, mm-hmm. but can also help you preserve lean tissue.
Right.
So on top of that though, if you are trying to lose weight and gain muscle, you also have to take your training into consideration.
Absolutely.
And this is where the fitness comes back, is that you can't just rely on your nutrition for this.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, yeah, you have to combine it with the proper resistance training program in order to stimulate that growth. Mm-hmm. So you have to have both things come into play. And I would even say, you know, at least for me, with weight loss, I think people largely underestimate that strength training does burn a lot of calories or a lot of energy that we've ingested. We only think of like, oh, I gotta lose weight, so I gotta become a runner.
Oh God. Yeah.
And I have to run until I die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's so not the case. I mean, think about, you know, especially I think the way that people can train these days too, where it's a little bit more dynamic. It's not just being on a machine mm-hmm. and just like localizing one muscle, but when you're bringing more muscles into play, when you're being a little bit more dynamic with your resistance training, more muscle use is burning more calories because you're utilizing more parts of that body. So don't think that like a steady state cardio is the only way that you could go into weight loss. Like you could go into weight loss with your resistance training program, and at the same time, you can be building on that muscle and you can be eating properly to a point that makes you feel satisfied mm-hmm. and supported in what you're doing mm-hmm. and just like, you know, healthy. So don't think that you cannot reach for both of those goals if that's something that you need in your life, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's why they really have those in-body scans almost in every
right.
gym now, because it's really important. That's where you change your body composition. That's
right.
why they measure your body. That's why they do all of these things. I remember a little while ago, I was down in San Diego and went to this really nice wellness retreat for 2 weeks. And I had a personalized chef mm-hmm. and we had a group of trainers and all of this. And I was literally losing a pound of fat while gaining a pound of muscle almost every single day consistently. Now, I was working out 6 hours a day, barely any running whatsoever,
mm-hmm.
Only as a warm up. We did a light jog,
mm-hmm.
but it was a lot of that dynamic movement within the gym and then doing some yoga and kind of, you know, throughout the day, and pairing that with someone who knew a lot more about nutrition that was able to just, you know, so I didn't even have to think about it. It was fantastic.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, it's really important to realize that that composition is where it's at. So it's going to someone or doing some body measurements, something where you're not just looking at a scale.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I mean, that going back to that conversation I had with my girlfriend the other day, I was just like, I don't know if you have in-body scans. She lives in Australia, so I'm not sure what they got going on. But I'm sure they do, but I was like, are you just looking at that number? Because it doesn't take in consideration, like, again, especially as women, like hormone fluctuations or water retention or, you know, one part of the body may be inflamed. And when you do an in-body scan, we had one at F45 and I was working there, it shows you like the water also within your body. Mm-hmm. It shows you more of a breakdown of what's actually going on versus right. just that number. Like that number is so
arbitrary.
Yeah.
For the most part. Yeah, absolutely. And it's
knocking shit over left and right. Sorry, guys.
She's getting too excited.
I am the puppy in this one.
Well, you know, it's really interesting to look at herbalism and fitness and how we have, because depending on where you are and where your mindset is, for a lot of people, those are totally polar opposites a lot of the time. You know, fitness has really gone in this chemical route a lot of the time because so many people are promoting all of these different supplements and all of these things.
Pre-workout.
So many men, especially our age, are listening to Joe Rogan, and he's, you know, freaking slinging everything under the sun at you at once. That guy's doing all kinds of shit. And it's just one of those things where you really have to make sure you're listening to your body. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about a little bit from an herbalist perspective, for those who maybe forage wildly, or because foraging is getting to be such a big thing here in the States now, which is a good thing, is that just avoiding the kind of decimation of any kind of herb or anything. Like some people just go out and they have a guide, a field guide. First of all, okay, great, you've got a field guide, but have you actually taken any courses? Because there's a lot of things that look similar in the wild that would kill you. For instance, hemlock. This is one that I taught my daughter about because we have hemlock growing on the property. But what you'll really notice is, you know, you need to identify certain things. Like with hemlock, there's purple on the stalk. There's some other things where it's not going to necessarily look like a carrot, and you can literally die within 30 minutes of eating it. So it's really important, first of all, to know and to get educated by somebody who's been out in the wild. You've got like Queen Anne's lace and a few others that have similar ones that look a little differently out in the wild.
I forgot what it was, but from Into the Wild, Chris McKindles.
It was supposed to be like a potato plant.
Yep.
And he ended up eating something that, yeah, literally shut down his digestive system. And, you know, just the aspect of not taking too much of a plant to really make sure that there's additional plant. Like mullein root, we mentioned on the show before, but if you pull up something by the root, you're taking the entire plant, whether you're going to use it all or not. So with foraging, it's really important to realize, is it an endangered plant? Is it something that, you know, should you only take, even if it's something that's fairly abundant, take a small portion of it for what you specifically need. This is why there's so many foraging laws. For those who don't realize, look at your state and your city and look at the foraging laws that are put in place. Now, unfortunately, a lot of these laws were put in place a really long time ago, and the history behind that is really linked to slavery and stopping African Americans from being able to sustain themselves after they were released from plantations and creating work and life for themselves. And so, you know, in particular in Philadelphia, it's technically illegal to collect your own rainwater or to have a garden.
That's crazy. How do you monopolize rainwater?
Right. But the thing is, yeah, it's just like whether or not they actually enforce those things, these are the things that are put in place in cities and towns and all of that. So I'm going to put a link
and
to
it. Can be enforced.
Like, right. Absolutely. Yeah. It can be enforced. So just watch for those things. So these laws are put in place in cities. Like Seattle has been a little more progressive in overturning some of these laws and have created forest community foraging forests. But something to really consider is, you know, be sustainable with the way that you forage. Make sure that you're not illegally foraging. Maybe become an advocate for foraging in general and overturn some of those laws in your city. Because even if they're not enforced, they should not be on the books. They really shouldn't. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. Storing your herbs is another one where people ask me all the time. And, you know, I say it might be a myth because there's a lot of misinformation out there. But I would say for dried herbs, you know, fresh herbs are not going to last very long at all. Mm-hmm. But for dried herbs that are put into sanitized, clean containers in a dark place stored in a dark place can last with the same potency for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
People take a lot of those herbs right around the time they're about to maybe turn or right at the beginning, and they create tinctures because it allows the life force of that plant to last for up to 2 years, maybe a little bit longer than that. So your tinctures, when you're making tinctures, if you're making them correctly, you're not giving yourself like botulism or something. They should be able to, right? They should be able to last up to 2-2.5 years if stored properly. So that's just something to keep in mind. Now, one thing that I think is always kind of a myth around teas in particular and green teas is caffeine and what that really looks like. And so, you know, a lot of people say, like, I can't even have green tea because I get the jitters from the caffeine that's in it.
I've said that. Or I felt like I couldn't have, like, more than one cup of green tea because I would start feeling really nauseous or, like, really uncomfortable.
Right.
More anxious than awake, necessarily.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so that goes back to what I said in the beginning, which is that chemistry, that phytochemistry of knowing the chemical components within the plant naturally and what that looks like. So it's really coveted. Green tea is really coveted because it's antioxidant properties. And what that really is that EGCG is...
CBGB.
But EGCG is that collective kind of component with those antioxidants that really give your body that boost and that buzz. It is not caffeine.
Mm.
You know, yes, you will feel it because it's really that strong life force of that plant coming. Mm. And so there's some, like, for instance, lemon verbena is a fantastic green option for teas that will not affect your stomach as harshly.
Mm.
You know, things like that to really realize. But it's going to have a stimulating effect, but it's not caffeine, so that's really important to realize with green tea. And then the other important thing to realize is when you're especially getting your tea from the grocery store, there'll be certain labels on the tea of how much caffeine is in them. Now, the regulations behind that are a little different, and so depending on the brand you get, when they've actually tested the caffeine in the plant in the process, because what we come to realize is that, you know, in the oxidation process, that can kind of increase the caffeine. So, you know, most of the time you see like black teas have more quote unquote caffeine,
right?
You know, and a lot of those, but what you're really looking
at,
it's
just a life force,
right? And so a really good example of this is matcha. Now, matcha has become increasingly popular here in the States over the years, and people are coveting it for its, you know, antioxidant properties, and it gives you that energy. It actually has 3 times the amount of EGCG, those antioxidants that are really great for your body and some of those other chemical components, than normal green tea.
Mm.
So, you know, that's like 130 times. It's just insane how much matcha has, but it's because of how it's processed. So with green tea, the leaves are dried, and so they oxidate a little bit. But with matcha, they take the actual leaf and they pulverize it into a powder. And so you're not getting that drying, oxidating quality to it. So it's going to have more of the life force of the plant from the beginning of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you see things like coffee has, you know, 100 milligrams, and then black coffee has 50 milligrams, and your white tea only has 10 milligrams of caffeine, it's not necessarily the case. You really just have to look at, okay, if this green tea hurts my stomach, you know, maybe it's too strong, maybe I'll go to a lemon verbena or something else. And that's just something, you know, that I get really often with people is that there's this myth that they can't drink tea because they're sensitive to caffeine.
Right.
And that's not necessarily the case. And if you're drinking a lot of this on an empty stomach, you're going to feel the effects of the, you know, I say the life force, but those chemical components within the teas a lot sooner than if you had, you know, food in your stomach.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, I cannot drink Earl Grey on an empty stomach.
Right.
I mean, I'll almost immediately start to feel nauseous. Like, by the time I wouldn't even get through a full cup before I start to feel nauseous. But now I'll be like, it's not the it's the CBGBs.
The EGCG.
You know? Yeah, the life. I like that though. I think that's cool. The life force, like, to kind of put it that way, and almost like it almost kind of like, I don't want to say it puts a personality or anything, because you're not trying to, you know, like humanize the plant per se, but it kind of reminds you and it keeps you more connected to what's actually happening. It's not mm-hmm. just this like arbitrary thing that we have growing and it's just like whatever, it's just this plant, I'm just throwing it in. But like it does have its own life force and
Absolutely.
It is giving to you that life force, and maybe knowing that and understanding that will also help you with that honorable harvest that we were talking about,
right.
like not trying to take too much of the plant's life.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at any kind of transition that happens or chemical reaction, you know, green coffee beans versus dark roast coffee beans, yeah,
mm-hmm.
they're going to have more caffeine. It's going to have a different effect to your body. And it's the same with teas that have oxidized for a longer time, like Earl Grey, and then have had other things added,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you're changing and you're creating this, you know, chemical change within that plant.
Yeah.
And so it's really important to know that and understand that and not just, you know, take it just as face value of just caffeine.
So many layers.
Yeah.
So many layers, like an onion. And I think with that, you know, we just dropped a lot of information on you guys, hopefully cleared some things up for everyone
mm-hmm.
That they had questioning. And next week will be the last episode of this season, and we're just going to kind of actually make it a bit of a personal one. We're going to ask each other some questions and kind of delve into a little bit more about kind of ourselves and how we got ourselves here, so that you could also feel that we aren't just this voice, but someone that you know. So we'll have some fun with that. It'll be a nice way to kind of wrap up 40 episodes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Killed it. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be really nice in wrapping up the season. So if you guys have any questions for us, send it to our Instagram. And
yeah.
we will answer the questions at the next show.
Oh, yeah. Do that. That would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be fun. All right, everyone. Peace and love. We'll check you next time.